We will come to order. Occasionally, we get the opportunity to have members of other legislatures join us, and I would like to ask Representative Don Carlson from the Washington Legislature to join us for just a moment, and jealously, they are already out of session. Of course, the Idaho Legislature is already out of session.
They were up 5 weeks ago.
So, Representative Carlson, would you like to just share a few words with us, Denny?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, ladies and gentlemen of the committee. I'm Don Carlson, State Representative from the 49th District, which is the city of Vancouver and some of its suburbs, and we're glad to be through. Although we do have a special session, hopefully one day, to deal with a transportation budget and perhaps a couple other items the governor thinks is important. But I do have a chance to serve on the education and higher education committees in the House. I'm one of the WICHE commissioners, the Western Interstate Interstate Commission on Higher Education. And I would like to bring greetings to you from our state and for the education, higher education issues. Education, higher education is an item that does not have to be divided by a river simply because it happens to divide us. It's an issue where we can work collectively and cooperatively. I know that you're members of the WICHE Commission. I know your commission members. I know you're a member of the Commission of the States. And I hope that as we proceed on, as you folks finish up soon, that perhaps this fall we can have, especially those of you on the border community between our two states, have a chance to meet together with representatives and senators from both sides of the river. I believe the Portland Chamber of Commerce and the Vancouver Chamber of Commerce is working to do just that. So I look forward to discussing those issues that are bi-state items that we can work at mutually cooperative and collegial activities. And I thank you for the chance to be with here and to observe your session today and wish you a success and conclusion of your session.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee, Representative Carlson? Thank you, Representative. Appreciate your sharing some time with us. We'll move into a work session on House Bill 3114. And we'll let the county administrator give us a quick update.
House Bill 3114 requires that public and private schools give instruction in Oregon history to students in grades 4 or 5 and in grades 9 through 12, and in Oregon Oregon government in grades 9 through 12. However, it has been amended substantially by being combined with another bill. The effect of those amendments or the effects are listed, and it's really the dash 2s that you'd want to take a look at. They incorporate the dash ones. I believe the dash twos are in your packet. There also is at least one set of proposed amendments that are not back from LC yet, but that we'll be giving you a look at on paper as soon as the copies of that arrive. But understand that they are not, they're not back from LC.
And could you just talk about the dash twos? Mm-hmm.
Chet Orloff is here.
Mr. Orloff, would you come forward, please? You were part of the work group.
I was.
You just kind of go over the dash twos with us just for a moment and tell us how you're feeling about those. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Chet Orloff, Director of the Oregon Historical Society. There were a couple of key amendments that were made here, basically simplifying the language of the original bill. Section 3, number 1, the Department of Education shall develop academic standards for Oregon studies by the year 2001-2002, with school year. And working with the Oregon Historical Society, the department will develop academic content standards in Oregon studies, which encompasses history, geography, civics, and economics as they relate to state of Oregon. In addition, the bill would provide funding for the development, which the Historical Society would match with private funds, for the development of teaching materials as well as teacher training programs to begin the development of the Oregon Studies program.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? The committee has all received the proposed amendment from Representative Winters. Representative Winters, you want to talk about your proposed amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The proposed amendment only expands the study and the material to assure that it includes the African Americans, Hispanics, Native American, and Asian Americans, those groups that are in Oregon, that we do not omit those when we're developing the history.
Great. Representative Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. Representative Winters, these are your amendments?
Yes.
Just a question. I assume that the wording that we have here is the wording that you're asking for in legislative council. Is that correct?
Correct.
It says including a balanced presentation of relevant contributions. What do you mean by balanced?
Just to assure that the effort is being made to include those. I guess balance may not be the word.
Balance, not necessarily making equal or
no,
equitable.
Okay, what I would ask the committee is, what I'd like to do is move this bill to Ways and Means, but if there's an objection to these conceptual amendments, then we'll just set it over until Wednesday and when we can actually get the LC draft back. Mr. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, I don't have a problem with that, but I do want to point out something that was noticed here by Representative Hobson. We have an incomplete sentence in that amendment. That begins with a word including. We might want to work on the grammar there.
What line?
That would be. I'm not sure we're dealing with a complete sentence there.
Oh, I see.
Well, that could be a Scribner's error.
Yeah, right.
I mean, we can treat that as a Scribner's error and correct it as the amendment sent down. But my concern is if there's an objection to from the committee for moving this.
The question into moving the amendments.
We would move the amendments, the dash twos, and then the conceptual amendment into the bill, and then move the bill to Ways and Means. That's
would
the question.
You want to hear the objection to
yes.
moving the bill?
Yes.
That's
so you object to moving the
okay.
But would you object to moving the
nope.
amendments into the bill?
Okay. No.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I don't think there's any further
well,
questions. Representative Morissette?
Yes. Are you going to testify? Okay. I guess I have I support everything presented. This kind of surprises me because I've been pushing for a long time for, you know, just 6 weeks of local government. And suddenly we're not only doing the whole semester, we're doing everything else. And this is, and I know there's a lot of sponsors on this thing, but I wish that I had been made aware of it. It kind of boggles my mind.
We're not dealing with the whole semester now, are we? The dash two
well,
that out.
We're dealing with a lot more than just civics. We're dealing with a whole new course of study at a time, and we're trying to cope with what we have.
And this doesn't require a SIM assessment. This is not a part of the SIM. This
yeah.
is part of the kind of so they. The assessment would be just at the local school.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morissette, basically what this would do is begin the development of this program and recognizing that it's going to take some years to put into place.
And for that reason, I'll support it.
Yeah.
Representative Jensen.
Yes, if I could, in clarification, this is not specifying a course or a particular course. It in fact, might be woven into other courses in the curriculum. Is that, am I understanding correct on that?
No, where it works. Okay, we're in work sessions, so the chair would entertain a movement of dash two.
In response, line 18, local government, or Oregon government, a course in Oregon government shall be required for a minimum of one semester, so that's not wobbling it into...
No, the dash two amendments, I think, changed that.
Okay. Go ahead.
Dash two amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Move the dash two amendments to House Bill 3114.
Representative Starr moves the dash two amendments into House Bill 3114. Is there discussion? Is there objection? They're adopted. Representative Winters?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3114.
We need to suspend the rules to move your conceptual amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move to suspend the rules for the purpose of a conceptual amendment.
Okay, Representative Winters moves that we suspend the rules for the purpose of a conceptual amendment. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Without objection. Representative Winters. Move the conceptual amendments into...
Mr. Chair, I move the conceptual amendment into House Bill 3114.
Representative Winters moves the conceptual amendments, which we just read, into House Bill 3114. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Are adopted without objection. We can move the bill two ways and means.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3114 to the committee on the education committee.
Representative Winters moves House Bill 3114 as amended. Okay. House Bill 3114 to the committee on ways and means with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the onset, I'm very supportive of history and civics and government and all those kinds of things being taught. What I'm against is twofold. Number one, the process that we're using to dictate and mandate what needs to be done in school districts and leaving out the Department of Education, whose function I thought that was. And the other thing is that, actually, those were the two things, the process of having the department left out and the school districts left out. And number two, another mandate when we already are having a hard time accomplishing what we're supposed to be accomplishing. So with all due respect, I don't vote against it.
Further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Beck.
Excused.
Representative Quill.
Aye.
Representative Hobson.
No.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Coe.
Aye.
Representative Morissette.
Aye.
Representative
Shar.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Winters.
Aye.
Chairman
Surge. Motion is adopted. And now we'll go to ways and means. Okay, thank you very much. Let's see. We'll go into a work session on House Bill 3476, Representative Plunkett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Lynn Lundquist, House 659. Before you have the dash one amendments, including an additional piece that we're passing out related to assessing effectiveness, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. First, I'd just like to go through the bill. The reason for this bill is, as you all know, at some point in this session, we're going to pass the state school fund budget for whatever that figure might be, and I think all of you know where I stand on that. But regardless of what the funding level is, I believe there's a need to have an accountability piece along with that. As we transfer a lot of our income tax dollars to the citizens of this state students, I think it behooves us as a body to do everything we can to make sure that there's a decent, sufficient level of accountability along with that. What I'm proposing is to amend ORS 329.085, and it is only one of three actually sections of ORS that deal with assessment and responsibilities of the state board as well as the local schools and the school districts. I'd like to start out by saying that in the bill on, or the amendment S1 on line 8, I think that's lines 8, 9, and 10 are a very important aspect of this bill. Because what that talks about, it talks about broadening this assessment out to school performance, student performance, and also student access to educational opportunities. And working with the department, and my own concept as well, I think there's a tendency to want to just focus on strictly on the scores. And this is broader than that. And I absolutely believe that's essential if we are going to have quality maintained in our schools. What this Dash-1 amendments do is that they set the standards, and that's on page 1 and actually sub 3 under section 1. And it's listed there, A through D, the standards by which this effectiveness will be evaluated. And then it goes on and talks about that the Board of Education will require what they call CDIPs, Consolidated District Improvement Plans. And on the next page, on page 2, would be the aspects that are to be included in the CDIPs, A through C. And then we go beyond that, and the board, and here, of course, being the State Board of Education, shall develop plans for recognizing three things here. First, they want to recognize school districts that exceed their goals. Secondly, they want to go to a level of providing technical assistance to school districts that request assistance and they do not meet their targets. And then we go beyond that to intervening in school districts that did not meet the improvement targets and require additional assistance from the departments. So you see, we have all the way here from complimenting and rewarding those school districts that meet their goals, clear to where we have an intervention process. And if you notice later on there, it does talk about that the standards will be reviewed. Now, that's the standards once in every 5 years. I want you to understand that. That's not just an evaluation of schools, but the standards that we talked about earlier on the bill. One of the issues we have, I believe, when we talk about evaluating schools is all the way from the award standpoint to the punitive standpoint. And there are those that believe we need to have dollars as part of the rewards. I'm here to try to emphasize that I believe there's a way to do it without dollars. In my opinion, we do not have sufficient funding for the SIM at the present time. And rather than take dollars and give them to those districts that excel, I believe we need to continue to spread those dollars out throughout the system. And, you know, you stop and think about it, and you think, well, now, why would a district want to excel? And I thought about it from the sports level. And we don't go to the districts and say, if you win the state football championship, you're going to have another, you know, $500,000. And yet, they work very, very hard to make sure that they can excel and they'd be the top of whatever sport is we're talking about. I just want to get across to you the concept. I think there are ways that we can do that, and the one I talked about of where we recognize those school districts, I don't know how that recognition should be, but I think that's a challenge of the board to determine how that recognition should come across. In other words, what I have in my mind here is a situation all the way from where we reward those school districts who do well, and to those that we actually come in and intervene in the school district we need to, and have a process by which we can make that evaluation realistic. Now, also in this other one you have here about assessing the effectiveness, the reason I gave you that is this. I think few people in this body, not in this committee I'm talking about, but I'm talking in the legislature, really understand how much is already in the law. And the sections 329.095, you see, that is not on my bill at all, nor is the next one, 329.100. That's already law. It's something that are just starting to begin to take place. And I think that we have a great deal, and I want to make sure we walk that fine line between being overly burdensome in regard to assessing and evaluating versus not doing it at all. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll take some questions, and I believe that Mr. Audrey Rosema may testify on this as well, I believe.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lundquist, are you suggesting that somewhere down the line we might see, as you drive into Pendleton, a sign, you know, home of the 2005 state academic champions?
Would that be?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know what the board is. I believe that could be. I mean, we are as human beings, proud people of what we accomplish. And I can tell you that some of the awards that you no doubt have received, whether it's a particular plaque or whatever it might be, have a lot of meaning to them, more than if someone gave you $100 or $1,000 for something you could accomplish.
Well, this is I'm probably editorializing, and it may not be appropriate in this session, but
I am acceptable, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I'm a competitive duplicate bridge player, and it's a tournament it's a game that people pay a lot of money to participate in, and they get absolutely nothing in terms of financial reward. The only reward that goes with it, as you indicate, is, you know, from a little plaque or from a little card that says you're at some such a level of competition. And I think your point is very well taken. I think that serves as a good example for your point. I appreciate what you're trying to do.
Further questions? Representative Morsell.
Yeah. I guess I will pontificate briefly, too, because I think we do give awards and recognition for what we consider to be extracurricular activities, but which are really part of the core curriculum, sports, sometimes the arts and so on, which are the first ones cut. And to give recognition for the core curriculum achievement awards, I think, to a school district is a good way to encourage excellence in those areas that we think are important. Would you agree?
Yes.
Any further questions? Ozzy, did you have something you want to say on this bill? Okay, no other questions? For the work session.
Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 1 amendments.
Representative Morsett moves Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 3476.
And I was there.
Discussion? This discussion, Representative Starr.
Do we know how much this is going to cost?
Representative Lundquist, do you have any kind of an impact statement on this?
There's Mr. Chairman, I apologize before, I don't think I went through you when I on Mr. Representative. Chairman, Representative Starr, we had some discussion about that. I do not know, nor do I know if anyone really knows how it costs. We're in the initial stages of it. For example, it's very, very hard to determine. There are only, I think, major costs that might come involved here if you had a significant number of schools that didn't meet the standards and at some point they had to go on an interview and that sort of thing. And that is pretty cut over the long haul.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Ozzy Rose, the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, and I'm not here to correct or help the representative. He can help himself. But to the last question, the key issue in here isn't what we would spend on rewards. I have no idea what that might be. The key issue is, in my view, the key issue is this strengthens what you did last time, and it essentially is what's already on the table in what the department has developed in our CDIP. And in that sense, I don't think there's an economic impact. If you get to the rewards and that sort of thing, maybe there's economics. I don't know what you do about that. But what I'm interested in is that the process that we're going to lay out and hold schools accountable, and we've been very involved with the department in developing a process, and what you're placing in the statute is essentially what's been done as a result of the instructions you gave the department one session ago.
Further discussion? Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for clarification, are we in work session?
We are, and we have a motion on the floor.
Okay, good. Because I don't think I have any questions, since this is my heart and my passion, as you all know. A couple of things I think are really important, and in answer to Representative Starr's question, this doesn't take any additional funding. It's just funding education, which we are going to do one way or another. The degree to that funding is certainly up for discussion and decision. On the other hand, in both of the amendments, the things that we're looking at are reducing class size, increasing the school year. I don't know how anybody on the committee or really anybody in the body can disagree with any of the factors that go together to make up the quality education model. How much money we get together to do it certainly can be debated, and I think we all welcome that debate. But the component parts that this stresses, I don't think we would, to the best of my knowledge, we wouldn't argue with. They're all valid, scientific, data-driven. A couple of other issues that come up, I've heard people criticize the quality education model because it's a business model and it's business-directed. As one who's been out in the field taking the hits all the time on this issue, I cannot tell you how many people say, why don't you run this like a business? It comes up all the time. I think what we have here in the quality education model is one that tries to combine the flexibility that unfortunately education has to have with the data-driven information in a business model. And as such, and I guess in closing, what we're doing here is just setting up a machine or a tool or a method by which we can fuse those and become absolutely accountable for the money coming in and hopefully a good product coming out. So I will obviously strongly support this.
Further discussion. The motion before us is to adopt the -1 amendments. Is there objection? Without objection, they are adopted. Representative Morsak.
I would move House Bill 3476 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Morsak moves House Bill 3476 to the floor as amended by this committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Beck, is
Representative Hopson? Yes. Representative Jensen? Aye. Representative Cano?
Aye.
Representative Morissette?
Aye.
Representative
Starr?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Winters?
Aye.
Representative Perry?
Both ayes. Motion is adopted. Representative Lundquist will carry the bill. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 3476. So we will go into a work session on House Bill 3480. Representative Lundquist. 3480, isn't that yours?
As far as TSPC.
Yes, it is, but I thought that was the one that you...
No, that's the other one is 3440.
34, Mr. Chair.
Warden.
Say for the record, my name Representative Lundquist in District 59.
Would you prefer to go to 3484?
3484 is
okay.
The bill that I need.
All right, we're going to recess 3480, and we will go to the work session, and we will go to the work session of 3484.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for the record, Mr. Lundquist, House 59. This is a bill I call Operation Independence. I'll make it very brief. I'll talk to all of you about this. If you notice on the bill, we have almost 100%, not quite. I think there's 4 or 5 names from this body, both of the House members that are not signed on to this bill. This is a bill that I feel very strongly about, passionate about. I think we should do preventive work in drug, alcohol, and tobacco. What this bill sets up is a pilot program whereby the schools would select, those pilot programs, those schools that wanted to, would select from an inventory of peer-reviewed curricula for drug, alcohol, and tobacco prevention. And I had a council that worked on this for about 18 months. and this is their product. The interesting part about that council's work was that when we first started out thinking, well, we need to develop a curriculum for this, and then we said, well, let's look what's already out there, and we found out that the peer-reviewed, there's very little, relatively speaking, and we decided, however, that let's not develop programs that we don't know will work. Let's try and go with what we know that's already out there. So that's what this is all designed to do. The difficulty of this bill and this body is that it has a fiscal impact. And so the amendments that I have drafted for the bill simply say in reality that this bill would only become effective, this program would only become effective if there was private or federal funding. We're working with Senator Smith to see if we can secure some federal funding for this. It's not a done deal by any stretch of imagination, but neither is it an outright no. So the concept, I'm very passionate about the concept for it, the difficulty of getting sufficient funding. I firmly believe that once we could have this in as a pilot program and we'd see the merit for it and it could become part of the curriculum over time and not have a large fiscal impact. Mr. Chairman, that's a brief explanation of what this bill does. I'll be open to any questions.
Questions? Just a quick question, Representative Lundquist. We passed a bill out of here a while back called House Bill 3565, which started education reform, and it says in that bill and still says to this day that none of this will be implemented unless funds are available. And we are cruising down the road without funds available. And could that same thing happen to this bill without funds available?
And Mr. Chairman, I might like that, but I think it will. I truly do not believe that will happen.
Okay. Representative Winters.
I certainly hope we find and we get the funds for it because it truly is needed and necessary. And I think if we look, I think practically the entire delegation have all signed on to this.
I was just looking at that. Who's not on it? Well, we're in a work session, so Representative Winters, if you would like to move the bill.
I move the amendments first.
Right.
The dash one amendment to House Bill 3484.
Representative Winters moves the dash one amendments into House Bill 3484. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Matter is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3484 as amended to the floor with the due pass.
Representative Winters moves House Bill 3484 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Hobson?
I just want to make one comment, and I certainly support this, particularly the part where it depends on acquisition of grant money, because I wouldn't want it coming out of the general fund. But I couldn't let this go by without noting that school districts are already doing a lot of work on drugs and alcohol, that this just provides some beefing up of that whole program. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I certainly would concur with my colleague, and especially with her background and awareness of what school districts are doing. But I think we are all aware that one of the major problems, not the major problem facing schools, is drug and alcohol. And it would be my hope that we may get some pilot programs out of this that will be able to tell us some things that we can adopt on a larger scale after that. And so, like the representative, I'm very supportive and to move ahead.
Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Beck, excused or
closed?
Aye. Representative Hobson?
Yes.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Cano?
Aye.
Representative Morissette?
Aye.
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Winters?
Aye.
Chairman
Ferry? Votes aye. Motion is passed. Representative Lundquist will carry that bill. And we will close the work session on 3484. We'll go into a work session on House Bill 3012. Carter. And we'll have the committee chairman give us a, or committee administrator give us an update.
This bill requires school district boards to acquire a firearm safety education program for children in grades K through 8 and to develop such a program for children in the 7th and 12th grades. That's amended in the dash 2s to require the boards to acquire that program for K through 6 and to create, or that there be created, a joint interim task force on firearm safety to develop a program for students in the 7th through 12th grades. Other features of the dash 2 amendments are some description of the content that the program ought to have, made some provisions for the work of the task force that is proposed, to allow the task force to accept contributions toward the cost of developing the program, and require that the task force report on their work by October 1st of next year.
Just for the committee's information, I want to add that in Judiciary Committee, and this is obviously not pertinent because this bill hasn't passed, but there's a bill there that deals with the forfeiture of automobiles that are involved in drive-by shootings. The bill as it existed allowed for the confiscating agency to retain those forfeited vehicles. And I have support on the committee for amendments to that bill that will allow the sale, the forfeiture, and the money that's netted from that to be directed to the Department of Education to fund this program if there is any additional expenditure. And I believe we've got some bipartisan support for that concept. And obviously that whether that passes or not shouldn't pertain here, but I just wanted the committee to know that we're working on that, and then that money, those funds would go through the department down to the schools to be able to help with this. So. Mr. Harder, the dash twos.
Chair Sinceri, member of the committee, for the record, I'm Rod Harder, the NRA representative in Oregon. We brought asked Representative Sinceri to bring this bill forward because the program across the United States has taught over 11 million young children and has proven itself to be a lifesaver. I believe you took to her testimony from our state coordinator, Tim Pitzer, who probably lined out for you the results of the 60-minute investigation into this, where two groups of children were put in a room with a gun. Those who had taken the Eddie Eagle course did not touch it, whereas the group who had not taken it picked it up, played with it, and some occasions pointed it at a peer and pulled the trigger. We believe that probably this course in starting children at a very early age to look at a gun through the eyes of the program, which basically says if you see a gun, stop, don't touch, leave the area, tell a responsible adult. And that's all the Eddie Eagle program does. It does not advocate or gun ownership. It does not oppose gun ownership. The dash twos have changed the language as to who would teach the course. It was fairly vague, but we have narrowed that down. The program the school district shall acquire a firearm safety education program approved by a national or state organization with technical expertise in firearms and extensive history of teaching firearm safety for children enrolled in public schools offering education to students in kindergarten through grade 6. It does not preclude any other organization from coming in and teaching a course. Mr. Pitzer, I think, has told you he is working with local law enforcement and with the medical associations in a number of cities, and they are helping him with the course, and this would be a component of those course. It goes on to say what the original bill says, it does not encourage or discourage firearms ownership. We'll educate students in kindergarten through grade 6 on the proper action to take if they discover a firearm in an unsupervised situation. What I've done is pass out to you the teaching materials. They can be very basic and go into a very extensive program. The course can be very economical. if we choose, or if the school chooses to make it that way. I believe Mr. Pitzer testified to you that he has funded any school that has asked to fund the program for the initial issuance of the course material. I cannot guarantee that NRA can continue to do that, but I can tell you there is an effort nationwide to fund these materials for schools that cannot fund them for themselves. Section 2, we have totally removed the requirement to teach a course for grades 7 through 12. The reason we did that is Mr. Pitzer is working with a group of people right now that includes a wide spectrum of the public, and they do include law enforcement, the medical associations, chambers of commerce, to try to come up with a program for firearm safety for schools. That would not teach people necessarily how to use weapons. What we would envision is a course that would begin at grade 7 to put peer pressure that on kids that it's not acceptable to play with a gun. We know at that age that we're not going to tell them to don't touch it and go tell an adult, but that the course as we envision it would teach that these are not playthings. They're things that are made with a purpose. They're not to take to a party and pass around the room, that type of thing. We would teach them that it was socially unacceptable to play with a firearm. Now, that's the concept. But the task force, of course, would end up having the final decision as to how that would look when they bring it back. What we envision and have asked for in the Dash 2s is a task force made up of one person appointed by the Superintendent of Public Education, a representative from the Oregon School Board, three members appointed by the President of Senate, which would be one senator, one member of the law enforcement community, and from a state organization promoting the safe use of firearms. The speaker would appoint three in addition. One would be from the medical community, one again from a national organization with technical expertise in firearms, and one member appointed from among the House of Representatives. They would function as most task force function and be supported by the legislative support that task force get, and would report to an interim committee on education for whatever legislation might come forward to the next session. That pretty much is what they do.
Questions for Mr. Hart? Representative Hobson, and then Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hart, I heard you say that the main point, I guess, in grades 7 through 12, which would be a mandated class as well, is to teach kids that it isn't socially acceptable to play with guns at parties or social gatherings.
Chair Sinceri, Representative Hobson, I it's not acceptable to play with a gun under any circumstances, not only at social gatherings, but the point is, at about grade 6, we start losing people when we tell them, go tell an adult. They've matured beyond that point. And we had an incident here in South Salem where a couple of young teenagers were chasing each other around the house with a 9mm, and one of them was shot fatally. What we would like to do is instill in those young people that type of activity is unacceptable, that when the gun came out, the other person present should have said, no, I'm going home, I'm going to leave, put it away, take whatever action is necessary to result in a safe surrounding.
Knowing that one of the main ways to teach children or young people or even adults for that matter is repetition, and if our goal here is merely to teach young people to be careful with guns, it's not the morality of using them, having them, owning them, wouldn't it be better just to say every day, don't touch guns?
Chair Sinceri, Representative Hobson, I guess coming from a family that uses guns constantly, I would not want to do that. No, I wouldn't want to say don't touch them, because there are reasons to touch them and there are reasons to use them appropriately. The task force would decide just what approach would be taken. I'm just telling you what I think a concept or a part of it ought to be.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Harder, could you tell me how long it takes to teach a course? Say, let's pull out a hypothetical situation. You've got one fifth grade class. How long would it take them to be instructed in the Eddie Eagle course, the full thing?
Chair, sincerely, Representative Wilson, the bill requires 1 hour per semester. That has proven to be effective. There is a very effective video that's done very well for those age groups. I have passed out to you the course materials and the instruction materials. They are geared and very simple, and the message is very simple. The message is just four lines: stop, don't touch, leave the area, tell an adult. An hour a semester has proven, with the 11 million teachers, children that the course is taught, to be extremely effective in that amount of time.
I have a follow-up. If this program were adopted and went on for several years, where would the stream of instructors for this come from?
Chair Sinceri, Representative Wilson, they would be classroom instructors. Now, we do have volunteers that will go in if the school wants to do that. We have many cities, law enforcement people teach this. A law enforcement person in uniform certainly gathers attention. And one of Mr. Pitzer's goals is to include law enforcement in those courses that are taught.
Representative Morissette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In answer to Representative Wilson's question, and I was going to ask you about McKinsey-Willamette Hospital's involvement in this program. Are you familiar with that?
Chair Sinceri, Representative Morissette, yes, I am. McKinsey-Willamette is Mr. Pitzer is working with McKinsey-Willamette as we speak and with this to put this course in the Springfield school if it has not already been there, if it's not already there.
Well, from my information, it has been very successful.
Thank you.
Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Harder, as you know, from when we first spoke many moons ago, I guess now, this has been an issue that has been real concern to me as a hunter in the past and advocate of guns and use of guns for, recreational and competitive reasons. But the one issue that has concerned me is that we need to do more with our young people, with our children, and especially the children that grow up in families that do not have parents who have guns around and who are themselves cautious and careful in their education and training of their children. So I really applaud you for what you're doing here, and I am most enthusiastic in support of it.
Chair would entertain a motion on the dash twos.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Close.
I move that we accept the dash two amendments into House Bill 3012.
Representative Close moves the dash two amendments into House Bill 3012. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? They're adopted. Representative Close.
Chair, I move House Bill 3012 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Close moves House Bill 3012 to the floor with a as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be voting against this for a number of reasons. I come from a family of hunters, very strong hunters, and I am not in favor of total gun control. What I am opposed to in this is another mandate, and I think everyone's going to get tired of hearing me say this. I think it's an issue that should be decided in the local school district. My school district does use Eddie Eagle, and it is indeed a fine program, and I think we should encourage people to do it. I think setting up another task force to look at this for a year, I think it is, does not, even if one were going to do this, doesn't seem the best way to do it. If classroom teachers are going to be required to do this, who's going to teach the classroom teachers how to do it? And also, what about the teachers who don't want to do this? We have to have somebody else do it. There's a waiver in there for kids who don't want to do it. The parents can get them out. What do you do with those kids while they're out of the classroom? That means another person is going to have to be doing something with them. So I just think there are a whole bunch of problems inherent with this, even though the intentions are good. And I certainly support kids being taught to be careful with guns. I don't think this is the method for it.
Further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Beck is excused. Representative Close?
Aye.
Representative Hoffman?
No.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Cano?
Aye.
Representative Morissette?
Aye.
Representative Starr?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Winters?
Aye.
Representative Sperry?
Votes aye. Motion is adopted. Representative Close, would you like to carry that bill?
Thank you.
Representative Close will carry. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2, Restriction 3012. Mr. Santos, are we on target? We will go. We'll go into a work session on House Bill 2262. Green.
Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green representing the Oregon School Boards Association. OSBA does not have a problem with House Bill 2262. The concern that we have, though, is that the information that's currently in the bill goes one way. School districts must report to folks. There isn't the requirement that the Oregon Youth Authority or district attorneys or city attorneys or juvenile authorities give the information to school districts. There is a bill moving through the process that's been approved, I believe, by the Senate, Senate Bill 449. It has reciprocity between and among the groups. School districts get the information, and the juvenile justice agencies get the information. I don't have a problem with 2262. It's just that it doesn't have that reciprocity that school districts receive information that we may need, like when the Oregon Youth Authority releases someone, and part of their parole and probation is that students stay in school and stay away from certain areas. I spoke with Mr. Oglesby a little bit about that. We don't have a problem. But I did want to alert you that there is a bill that a group of folks came together and worked on to secure not only personally identifiable information remain secure, but that the free flow of that information happens. This bill is a one-way flow, and 449 is working its way through the process.
Okay. Any questions? Kathy Osborne, have you got any interest in this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy Osborne from Juvenile Rights Project. I was part of the work group on the Bill 449. I have no problems with 449. There are perhaps some problems with House Bill 2262. There is a federal law which restricts what information schools can release, which is referenced in Senate Bill 449. It's not referenced in House Bill 2262. I don't think it'd be a problem that it's not referenced because the federal law is more restrictive, but that is a potential problem. And I think Mr. Oglesby has another.
Chairman, the members of the committee, Larry Oglesby, the Oregon Juvenile Department Directors Association. This was the bill that we requested to have brought forward. We also participated in the work group on Senate Bill 449, which, as was described earlier, does have this same provisions among other provisions. We're supportive of both bills. The one thing that I wanted to add in addition today was, as requested by Nancy Miller from the Court Administrator's Office, in subsection 2B of the of this bill, where it says a person shall occur without prior written consent of the student's parent or legal guardian, she suggests adding or as otherwise provided by law, because there is the ability for, in current law, to receive that information without the release if it's ordered by the court, as an example. So that was a concern that she had. We could fix that on the Senate side if that's appropriate, but that was one addition that she would recommend.
Is there, Mr. Wilson, you have a question?
Go ahead.
What I wanted to know is if everything that you wanted in this bill is in the Senate bill, then this bill is unnecessary?
We believe that to be the case.
Mr. Wilson, go ahead. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not clear on what you're saying about the parole notification. Then, is it required or isn't it?
Chair Sinceri, Representative Close, the suggestion from Ms. Miller is in regard to whereby it's already required by other Oregon law in the juvenile code, where, as an example, a court will order that this information be provided, so that it's already provided. So this is just a clarification that it does not change current law.
Any
perhaps I can, Mr. Chair, Representative Close. There are several areas in the juvenile code that give relief without the parent's consent, such as two. The citizen review boards will get copies of the school records of children that whom the citizen review board is reviewing their case, and that happens without the parent's consent. That's by law. The attorneys for the child can get a copy of the school records without the parent's consent, and that's by law. What Nancy Miller wanted and added into this law is that the request, the parental consent is not needed if there's other provisions in law that say that parental consent is not needed.
Mr. Chairman. But Ms. Miller's suggestion is not included in the bill, isn't that correct?
At this point, Mr. Chair, Representative Close, at this point that is correct, that it's not in there. Her concern is that she thought it should be added in to this bill. It is in Senate Bill 449.
I just would like to make a couple of updates on this bill. One is the fact that you've all received a proposed amendment that is not back from LC yet, okay? And that just before the meeting, we received the fiscal impact on the dash ones, and it's minimal.
Representative Morissette.
Just for clarification, there is a federal statute that prohibits school districts from giving information without parental consent that requires enabling legislation, and that's the FERPA bill. Now, that is taken care of in the Senate bill, but not in this bill. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Morissette, my understanding is that Oregon already has, I believe, their enabling legislation for FERPA. The 449 references FERPA and the fact that FERPA stops some information from going out. This Senate Bill 2262 does not reference FERPA currently. And that was the concern that I had, is there is no reference that there is another limit to the law to what could be released.
And can I follow up? Are you saying that the Senate bill does not reference FERPA?
Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Morissette, no. Senate Bill 449 does reference.
It does reference FERPA. That's yes. Okay. That's what I thought.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The dash one amendments are the ones that are, no, the dash twos that are being done in LC right now. The note that we have says that it's to add, quote, notwithstanding RS 30.864. Can perhaps the administrator give us an idea of what 30.864 is, or are we going to wait on this bill and I can look it up for myself?
I think we're going to pull this bill off is what my intention is, and then we'll wait for the Senate bill. But as long as the Senate bill supposedly addresses everything, and we'll have testimony on that Senate bill to make sure that it's where everybody wants to be. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was my understanding that this particular legislation, proposed legislation, was to meet the FERPA requirement. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, that is correct. The clarification here I think needs to be made is this bill was to provide that state exception that FERPA allows to allow the schools to share that information. What Ms. Osborne was referencing, the difference between this bill and the other bill, is there's a specific reference to FERPA in Senate Bill 449. There is not a specific reference to FERPA in this bill. But the intent of this bill was, in fact, to create that local exception to allow that to occur.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was my understanding, but I thought you got just a little different information than that a second ago, and I may have misunderstood. I just needed to clarify that because that was what I thought we were trying to do, create the specific exception that this federal statute requires.
Representative Jensen, that is correct.
Okay, we will close work session on House Bill 2262. Thank you. Okay. We will open a public question. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 2251.
Committee members, for the record, my name is Woody Farber, Executive Director of the State Scholarship Commission. On House Bill 2251, in the first hearing, several issues and concerns were raised in discussion of that bill, and we have submitted some proposed changes, which are not back to legislative council yet, is my understanding, and that we are still waiting on. But basically, they would address some concerns Treasury had as far as current rules that they would like to have followed for issuing of bonds, and so that language was put in there. Additionally, that the unused bonding limit could be carried forward from year to year, which federal IRS rules allow for to happen, and to correct a drafting error in Section 13 to leave some language in there that we should have left in it inadvertently took out.
And do you expect those by Monday or Tuesday?
I believe so.
And are we going to have an updated fiscal? An updated fiscal? We're going to...
We've asked for that.
We've asked for that. I think because there's a fiscal, we'll not try to do anything with any kind of a conceptual amendments on this. We'll put this bill over until Wednesday.
Thank you, Chair.
So we will close the work session on House Bill 2251, and we'll go for until Wednesday. Did Representative Cruz come into the... Do you know which room he's in?
No,
it's... we'll do a public hearing on House Bill 2471.
Chair, is this a work session or a public hearing?
Okay, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2471. And we're going to go into a work session on House Bill 2240. Governor?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome.
Members of the committee, the Director John Kitzhaber, Governor. I appreciate very much your giving me the opportunity to speak to you briefly today on House Bill 3240. What I would like to do, and the reason I requested this, was to clarify my position on this bill as well as on Senate Bill 100, the charter school bill that is currently over on the Senate side. I also want to recognize the work this committee has done in on this bill and the many modifications that have gone through, and the efforts you have made towards reaching a compromise position. I believe there are two areas of disagreement that remain. One is the issue of teacher licensure, and the other is the issue of collective bargaining protection. On the issue of collective bargaining, although the committee did not, in its judgment, include the collective bargaining language and the fair dismissal law in the list of unwaiverables as I requested, I do accept that some of the other changes that you made do provide some measure of choice for employees. So in the spirit of compromise, I will withdraw my objections to the collective bargaining language as it is written in Senate Bill 100, and we'll be willing to accept that. That leaves the issue of teacher licensure as the major point of contention. As you know, I have been unable to support the revisions in Senate Bill 100 as it's written that allows 50% of the teachers to operate without any form of licensure. Hopefully, we can use House Bill 3220 as a vehicle to take one more stab at coming to a middle ground. I, Mr. Chairman, as you know, have been fairly clear from the start about my belief that we need to have all professional staff licensed. I know that the committee wants the opportunity to make community resources available, individuals who are not and do not wish to become licensed teachers, but to bring those folks into the classroom to provide teaching opportunities. I am aware that you spent quite a bit of time with the TSPC exploring this issue, and I believe that in all examples that you brought forward, there was a TSPC alternative licensure option available. But while it's still unclear to me exactly what problem we're trying to address by insisting that 50% of the teachers not be licensed, I do appreciate that it is important to you and to other people, and it is one of your bottom lines, and so we need to deal with it from that standpoint. I feel, Mr. Chairman, very strongly that if public dollars are going to be used to support charter schools, then the parents and the public deserve, at the very least, to know that the background and qualifications of these teaching staff have gone through some kind of process of public review and accountability. To me, it's an issue almost not as much about licensure as it is about accountability for the expenditure of public dollars and having some sense about the individuals that will be teaching our children. And I would remind you that we are talking about a group of individuals who today are not legally allowed to teach in our schools. And we're making a major change here by allowing 50% not to come under regular alternative TSPC licensing options, and I think we should not do so lightly. So what I would propose, Mr. Chairman, and I have some draft amendments there to House Bill 3220. Essentially, they amend House Bill or Senate Bill 100 if we put this interesting and Byzantine process together. But essentially, it creates a new charter school license that would be required for teachers who choose not to operate under a regular or alternative TSPC license. And it would specifically deal with those individuals, and it would simply assure three things. One, that those teachers, those who are teaching our children, have some level of experience that's relative to the subject they will be teaching in school. Second, that their education and their work experience are verified. And third, that they haven't had a license revoked in some other place in Oregon or in some other state. It seems to me that those are very reasonable requirements we should ask of these individuals. I believe that if we move in this direction, it allows three licensure options: the regular TSPC license, the alternative license for a beautician or a welder or a leader programmer who wants to come in and teach in the classroom, and essentially an application that allows some public verification of that the individual has some relevance to what they'll be teaching, that they haven't had their license revoked, and that their work experience is verified. So while I am unwilling to sign up for simply allowing 50% of the teachers to teach with absolutely no public record of their credentials, I'm certainly willing to do this, and I'm certainly willing to give up on the collective bargaining issues. And, Mr. Chairman, in conclusion, if my understanding is that the Senate leadership is willing to hold Senate Bill 100, at least for the time being, to see whether some compromise can be worked out in House Bill 3240, and if, in fact, that is the case, and I receive these two bills, then I will be in a position to sign both of them.
Representative Morissette.
Mr. Governor, I don't see any request for continuing education of these teachers who would be affected by this new licensure. Are you not including that?
That is not included as the amendments are drafted. What it does require is a three-year license that would require a reapplication and review after 3 years, but that is not a part of the amendment.
Are we in work session or just public hearing?
We are in work session.
Okay. I find that kind of hard to believe and accept, because I think I'm on the Business Consumer Affairs Committee, and we have architects coming before us asking for continuing education. We have all kinds of professions asking for that, and in keeping with your opening remarks that this is public money expended, and we do want some sort of verification, to me, it's unacceptable that we don't have continuing education.
Ms. Chair, Representative Morissette, I would not be adverse to that kind of an amendment, but my understanding, and I don't want to put words into the mouths of the proponents, but my understanding is if the objective was originally to have 50% of the teachers who simply didn't have a license, those individuals would not be subject to continuing education requirements either. And essentially, I have tried in good faith to step halfway across the road here and have some requirement that at least they have some background experience that's relevant to the course that they're going to be teaching and an opportunity to review their performance after a three-year period. But your points will take it.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Governor, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I guess the question that my colleague here brought up is an important one, but it seems to me, and maybe Dr. Mighton's the one to answer this, that if these are certified teachers or licensed teachers under other statutes, they would still be required to do continuing education units. I'm looking at Dr. Mighton because maybe you know the answer to that.
I do not know the answer to that, Mr. Chairman.
But I think that is a possibility.
Further questions? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Governor, welcome. I'm like these two members of your own party. I'm not going to try to give you a hard time here. I wanted to ask you about two of the three points here. One of the trailblazing aspects of this whole thing has been for parents to be able to have a direct choice in the choosing of the teachers here. And your point about being able to check to make sure they haven't been revoked is of course, a real legitimate concern. And I want to go back and reprise the first two issues here. One of the points would be to establish that the individuals have some level of experience. And then your second point here, I think, was to verify education and work experience. On these two points, I was wondering what your response would be to the fact that with this law, the way it currently is written, the parents would have this opportunity to make this choice regardless of licensure, and they would be able to have the opportunity to decide whether they were satisfied with the teachers or not based on what is actually going on in the classroom. Are they achieving results with their children? Do you think that requiring them to go through this special charter licensure would in any way impede that trailblazing aspect, if we can say, giving the parents real choice and an expectation of results or a different teacher?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, I don't believe so. I view this more as an application that is brought by the charter school and by the teacher. So I assume that the charter school has conferred with the parents and they've decided who they want to constitute 50% or less, up to 50% who don't carry a license, and essentially it's a matter of just some public oversight to ensure that these dollars are going to the people who meet these three, I think, very minimal requirements.
Further questions? Thank you very much, Governor.
Thank you.
Okay, committee, you have the dash threes before you, which are the governor's proposals. I would note on page 2, line 21, specificity of the requirement that would really be 100% licensure. I believe that really to be the essence of these dash threes. You also have the dash two amendments, which provide for page 2, line 5, for TSCP to establish a charter school license and that license is available and can be used at the option of the charter school. And the chair will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Starr.
Move the dash 2 amendments.
Representative Starr moves the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3240. Discussion. Representative Morissette.
I will be voting no on both dash 2 and 3 because I don't want to make a bad bill any better. And obviously the governor is not going to veto it, so I'm going to vote no.
Representative Hobson.
Just a little levity. I'm going to vote for it. And there's a line in here I want to be on record. I'd like to get certificates and licenses in my district within 2 working days. Sorry.
Okay, further discussion. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Beck is excused or been opposed?
Aye.
Justin Hoffman?
Yes.
Justin Jensen?
Aye.
Justin Knoop?
Aye.
Justin Morissette?
No.
Justin Starr?
Aye.
Justin Wilson?
Aye.
Justin Winters?
Aye.
Justin Ferris?
Votes aye. The dash twos are adopted. Representative Starr?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 3240 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Starr moves House Bill 3240 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Beck is excused. Representative Close?
Aye.
Representative Hoffman?
I'm sorry, are we on the dash ones?
No, we're moving the bill as
amended. May I just a point of clarification? Maybe I made an error. I thought we were voting on the dash threes, the governor's.
No, the motion was to move the dash twos.
I made a terrible mistake. Is there a way to get out of this? I thought we were on the dash threes.
Let's see. We're in the middle of a vote, though.
Suspend rules.
Okay, Representative Starr moves that we suspend the rules to allow Representative Hobson to change her vote on the dash twos. Representative Hobson, how do you vote?
I would like to vote no on the dash twos.
Representative Hobson changed her vote to no on the dash twos. Now we'll just, can we resume with the same vote counter? Do we have to make the motion again on the bill? Okay, Representative Starr moves House Bill 3240, as amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Beck
is excused. Representative Close?
Aye.
Representative Hoffman?
No.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Representative
Snow?
Aye.
Representative Winters?
Aye.
Chair Scarry?
Votes aye. Motion is adopted, and I will carry the vote. And we will close public hearing on House Bill 3240. Can we get Cruz now? Okay, I think we'll stand down until 3 o'clock. The committee will recess until 3 o'clock.